notice we haven't actually been recording this. So from this point it'll be recorded. I'm sorry for missing the recording. So he says here, the Quran is a total religious law, he wrote in 1996, which regulates the whole of political and social life, and therefore a devout Muslim living in the West must aspire to live under Sharia law, and a multi-faith society is not consistent with Islam's inner nature. In other words, the Pope subscribes to a version of the clash of civilizations theory, which sees a fundamental incompatibility between the Western and the Islamic cultures. In his opinion, the primary aim of Christian-Muslim discussion is merely to avoid conflict. Now, I want you to notice that this multi-faith idea is not in his mind at all. It is merely to avoid conflict, and he recognizes that you cannot make total peace with Islam, because by its very nature of the Quran isn't like that. The Quran doesn't look upon the God in the same way at all. Then it goes on in this article. It says, although he described the Muslim approach to violence as defying God-given rationality, the Pope had no intention of offending ordinary Muslims or creating media headlines. Yet the leader of the world's Roman Catholics has done both. How could a man who is so notoriously careful with words have committed what in the eyes of liberal society is a diplomatic blunder? And this is an interesting question. It says, the answer may be that underlying Benedict's nuanced worldview is a deep-seated fear of Islam, which crops up in the daily conversation of Italian Catholics and stretches as far north as his Bavarian homeland. He does not believe that the Quran condones terrorism. He bears no animosity towards peace-loving Muslims, but he is worried that the aggressive ethos of authentic Islam may provoke a crisis in the Western society. And if the price of making that that point is a diplomatic blunder, in quotes, then so be it. Now that, again, is a very, very interesting analysis of the situation that we find within Europe today, within the Catholic Church today, within the comments that have been made today, or yesterday, the comments were made. We turn over to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. We find here in Matthew 24 that just before the tribulation comes, there's going to be an event. In verse 15, it says, and when you shall see the abomination of desolation, abomination that makes desolate, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, that reads Daniel, let him understand, then let them which be in Judea flee to the mountains. And it gives the instructions of what we've got to do and how we've got to flee and not going back into that area again. We know from Luke 21, if you turn over to Luke chapter 21, what this event actually is. Luke 21 describes this. It says in verse 19, it says, in your patience possess you your souls. In other words, wait. You've got to wait until certain things occur. And when you will see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. So the abomination that makes desolate is the surrounding of Jerusalem with armies. Then let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let them that are in the midst depart out, and don't let them that are in the other countries enter therein too. So this, just before that fleeing, it is this abomination that makes desolate, and that abomination is the armies that are surrounding Jerusalem. Now if you go back to Daniel, and we actually read within Daniel, and see what this particular prophecy is talking about here in Daniel 12, where it talks about in verse 11, from the time that the daily sacrifice will be taken away and the abomination that makes desolate set up, there'll be 1,290 days. These are the days of Daniel, and these, I've gone through them several times, I don't want to go through them again, but it also tied in, therefore, to the daily sacrifice being taken away. So these armies that are going to surround Jerusalem are also going to take away the daily sacrifice, and it will precede the time when the Great Tribulation will occur. Now we find the Great Tribulation in Daniel 12 verse 1. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince that stands for the children of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, every one that's found written in the book. So we find the Great Tribulation being mentioned there in a time sequence of an incredibly long prophecy about the king of the north and the king of the south that leads into the beginning of chapter 12 and the time of the great tribulation. So by going back just another stage, just another step, you find these events that precede this time of the great tribulation and bring about this time where the armies are going to surround Jerusalem. And you can see within the prophecy at the end of Daniel 11 the things that lead up to it. Now, in verse 40, it says, "At the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him." That's the king of the south pushing at the king of the north. "And the king of the north will come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen, many ships, and he will enter into the countries and overflow and pass over." Now, that happened certainly in type in the Second World War. That happened when Mussolini and Abyssinia, as it was then, came north. Mussolini went over and it conquered that area. But that, I believe, is only a type, because it goes into the future prophetic element, because verse 41, "He shall enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand." Now, this is clearly understood to be prophetic. It's from this time forward. So something to do with the king of the south against the king of the north is going to trigger, or something in that area is going to trigger the armies coming down from the north and surrounding Jerusalem, which will be the sign to God's people to make sure that they don't go into that area, to get out of that area. And it is the abomination that makes desolate. It is the abomination that is going to make that area desolate, or the armies. But notice in verse 42, "He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape." So it gives Edom and Moab and the children of Ammon, those will be away, they will not be under his control. But the land of Egypt will be under his control, so he'll sweep down into that area. "But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps." So you'll see that it goes as far as Libya, and the North African countries. "But tidings out of the east and the north shall trouble him." So that's looking up towards Russia that will give her problems. "And therefore he will go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly make away many." Now, putting it together with other prophecies, we find that the many that will be made away almost certainly include the Ephraim and Manasseh, and these areas which will then be subjugated. But in verse 45, I want you to notice, "And he shall plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain." Now, where is that? Between the seas are the seas of the Mediterranean and the Dead Sea. And it is in the glorious holy mountain, which is Mount Zion, which is the area of Jerusalem. So it looks as if this is going to be the focus, and yet he'll come to his end and none shall help him, and that time shall be the great tribulation. So it is at that time when they surround Jerusalem, and they will change the center, the world headquarters of the beast power will be at that area, will be actually diverted into that area around Jerusalem. And it could well be that the Pope will, in fact, be instrumental within this and will cause much of this, the difficulties that have been in that area and the difficulties coming out of that area that caused the armies to come down in the first place. He will use his offices to go ahead and oversee and to placate, be the peacemaker. Another very interesting thing that has happened in this past week or so, is that an article came through to me over the internet talking about, there's various articles, and a couple of articles. The first one was "New Map of Britain That Makes Kent a Part of France, and It's a German Idea." And this is, in fact, the centres of influence, apparently. This is from Tim Shipman, and this article goes into these various maps that they've got. But I wasn't so interested in that map, which reshaped the view of Europe as far as Britain was concerned, because it does. It's got this particular map carves Britain up and splits the entire country, puts Wales completely separate from London and that area. But that wasn't the most interesting thing. There was another map within this section, this article that came across. This is coming out of Europe. And this article, or this particular map, gives the centers of influence for the European control. The interesting thing about this is that there are 10 of them. Now that is very, very significant. If we turn over to Revelation 17, the 10 toes and the 10 kings here, where it says in verse 12, it says the 10 horns. And this woman that's riding the beast, this woman which is the church, in the false church, riding the beast, and the beast is this medieval, resurrected Holy Roman Empire. And it talks about these 10 horns in verse 12, which you saw are 10 kings that have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. It's going to happen very, very suddenly, and it will happen in a very short space of time. And it says, these have one mind and will give their power and their strength to the beast. So the individual who will control, who will be overall control, will in fact be given strength and given power from 10 kings. Now these 10 kings are rising out of this medieval Holy Roman Empire. And we're looking therefore for 10 kings. This map, which gives this overlapping influence throughout Europe, and as I say, the interesting point is not so much where they all overlap, but the fact that there are 10 centers of influence. There are 10 areas, these overlapping areas, with presumably 10 directors that would be over these 10 areas. This, therefore, fits within this prophecy, where there are going to be 10 kings. There are going to be 10 areas, regions, whatever, 10 centers of influence. And so this is a very profound map, quite frankly, as far as prophecy is concerned, and is something that we should certainly keep our eye on and make sure that we do keep our eye on it. At the same time, another article, and this was coming from, let's see, where has this actually come? I'm trying to look at the source. This is EU Observer. It says Frattini was keen to speed up the EU anti-terror machine. And it says EU terror prevention efforts are stuck in member states' decision-making machinery, EU Justice Commissioner Franco Frattini has said. But Denmark is warning against rushing through laws which would harm the citizens' rights. And his comment is, shall we just sit around and wait for the next European terrorist bombs? Mr. Frattini asks on Thursday, that was the 13th of September, talking to the Danish newspaper Politiken. So he is trying to rush through the anti-terror machinery necessary and to cause the European... well, it's a union. It's a unity within Europe on the justice side to combat terrorism. And it does seem that this threat that is in the Middle East, which is coming from Islam, which the Pope has commented about the very nature of Islam itself, is something we've got to make sure we're watching. We must be watching the Catholic Church's response to it. We also need to be watching this 10 areas of Europe that have been carved up or have been certainly talked about, because all of these do fit in to the overall prophecies and is an area, as I say, that we've got to keep our eyes on well into the future.